Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. I want to let our listeners know, before we get started, that you're going to hear a little background noise today. There's a little hum of a machine and a little beeping noise, too. And this is all connected to our guest's oxygen supply, so very important that we have that noise in the background. Our guest today is Richard Davis. Richard was born in the wilds of Minneapolis, Minnesota in 1932, the oldest of two children. He was educated in the public school system, graduating from high school in 1950. He was raised as a conservative, non-Orthodox Jew. He continued his education at the University of Minnesota, where he graduated with a BA, BS, and MD, the latter in 1956. He had postgraduate training at Bellevue Hospital in New York City and at the University of Minnesota, and at the AFIP, Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, in Washington, D.C. He served on the faculties of the AFIP, George Washington University, USC, and UCSF. He retired from the latter as Emeritus Professor of Pathology in 2000. During his scientific career, he was involved in research, mainly on human brain tumors. Richard was married in 1964 to Anita J. Brinkman. They had three children and eight grandchildren. Anita and Richard met at a happy hour during their military service. She was in the U.S. Army WAC and he in the U.S. Navy. Anita, who had been raised as a liberal Lutheran, and Richard joined the neighborhood church in Pasadena, California in 1969 as they sought liberal religious training for their children and themselves. They were involved with Peace World, the Pacific Southwest Institute of Religious Liberals, at Camp de Benneville Pines from 1971 to 1981. After moving to the San Francisco Bay Area, they joined the UU Church in San Mateo, where Richard is still a member. Both were deeply involved in UUSM activities until their retirement in 2019. Richard also became involved in the Pacific Central District and UUA activities, serving as the PCD board president in the late 1980s and 90s. He also served on the UUSM board and was the board president. Richard has continued his training in the Beloved Conversations movement, both at UUSM and with the UUA. Richard, welcome to the Connections Podcast. I've been looking forward to sitting down with you for a podcast episode because your name comes up a whole lot when I ask people who should I interview. We covered a lot in your introduction, but I have a few questions for you. So you were born and grew up in Minnesota, and you went to college and medical school at the University of Minnesota. It looks like your first excursion in terms of living in a different state was when you did your postdoc training at Bellevue in New York. Did you like living in New York?
Yeah. First, I should say thank you for that nice introduction. Actually, I had traveled outside of Minnesota. I wasn't quite so confined, though I had not gone terribly far. I think the furthest was the West Coast and Florida on several occasions. My first time in New York City was my stint at Bellevue. At that age, I was in my mid-20s, New York was really exciting. It's the really big city. Minneapolis is a good-sized community, but New York was the apex of big cities, and it was very seeing there are a lot of places to go, of course, all right. sorts of things to do. Unfortunately, I was in training at Bellevue, and we had a lot of scheduled time, so I didn't get a lot of time out.
In what year did you join the Navy?
Good, yeah, 61, I think it was. Yeah, 61.
Okay. And what was your motivation to join the Navy?
At that time, it's difficult to go back in time and very interesting to do so because circumstances do change. I went through medical school in what was called the Berry Plan. You had to agree to serve for 2 years as a physician, as long as they exempted you from being drafted as a physician before that. So I could finish my postgraduate training as a civilian.
Okay. When did you leave the Navy?
In 1969.
Okay.
I got out when I accepted the job at USC and decided to pursue my professional life as a civilian. I realized at that time that I would not be happy attempting to pursue a research and teaching career in the Navy.
You and Anita were married in 1964.
Yes.
And where did the two of you live then?
We lived in Silver Spring, Maryland, which is the Walter Reed campus, which was where the Armed Forces Institute was located, in far northwest Washington, very close to the Maryland line. We lived just over that line in Silver Spring and were able to get a nice apartment and settled in there after we got married.
And did you live there until you moved to the Bay Area?
No.
Okay.
The Navy, in its wisdom, could not stand for me to stay on active duty in a single place for too long. They get very nervous if you stay at the same place. So I was transferred in 1965 to the Naval Hospital in San Diego. We moved out there in July of 1965. Got an apartment there to live in until we bought a house. And we're finally able to get into that. And almost immediately, our son was born. Anita was traveled cross country, great with child, as they say. Stephen joined us that September.
Okay. So when did you make the move here to California?
That was the move to California was in 65.
Right.
Then I got the position at USC in 69 and stayed in Los Angeles at USC until 1980. We lived in a suburb of Los Angeles. Then we moved to San Francisco in 1980 and have been Northern Californians ever since.
Yeah. All right. What brought you into Unitarian Universalism? How did you make the jump? I know that Anita was liberal Lutheran and you had been
raised Jewish. Yes. I had drifted actually away from any contact with religion aside from funerals and things of various sorts. Actually in medical school and on into my postgraduate training. When we were married, Anita wanted to continue her involvement with the church, and that it felt best that we both go together. And so for a long while, on into San Diego, we attended the, what I'd call soft Protestant services that were conducted by the Army and Navy chaplains at Walter Reed and then at the Naval Hospital. Made some wonderful friends. When we came to Los Angeles, our kids were starting to nudge the years when they really needed some additional cultural experience. Okay. And so we started looking for churches, and we were living in a suburb of Los Angeles called San Marino, which is located just south of Pasadena and is probably best known because the Huntington Library is in San Marino. And so we found a place there and then started looking for a church and looked at several church facilities. And we weren't really happy with any of them until we got to Neighborhood Church. And it was at that time affiliated with both the Congregational movement and with the UUA. Its minister, however, was born and bred UUA, Brandock Lovely, gave fantastic sermons. And they had a very active RE program, which met our needs there. And we started going, and it became a center of our social life.
Right.
It reminded the congregation here at UUSM is very much like the congregation at Neighborhood, extremely friendly and welcoming, and you feel like you belong forever after a week.
Yeah.
It's just a special feeling.
How did you find UUSM?
Oh, I looked in the telephone directory.
Well, of course. Did you move to San Mateo when you moved?
We were living in Hillsboro.
Okay.
Again, we went there because of the school system.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest UUA church to us was UUSM.
Okay.
And so we said, well, we'll come down and try that out. At that time, UU churches pretty much all took the summer off.
Mm-hmm.
And had no services or cover services during the summer. We came down here the Sunday after Labor Day in 1969 and never left. It was a wonderful experience. I have trouble remembering names now, but we got a very, very warm welcome. The minister at that time was Bernie Kruger, who we found very, very compatible with our ideas about religion.
Right. When did you first feel like you belonged at UUSM?
Well, actually almost instantly. It was a very special kind of warmth. The McMahons, the Seabodies, among a number of others, were just very, very welcoming and warm and made us feel like we were old friends and neighbors.
Yeah. It sounds like a big part of why you came to the UU Church was because of your children. So tell us a little bit about your three children.
Oh, yes. We have three kids, as you said. They're all grown and with their own families now. The oldest is Stephen, who's now living in Palo Alto with his wife, Eleanor, who we met here, by the way, at a committee meeting.
Oh, really? Lovely.
Yes. People tell me that sparks flew and they could see that. And the other people that were at that meeting. And I wasn't there, so I don't know. Stephen quickly found Eleanor.
They live in Palo Alto now. And
they have two kids.
Two kids.
Okay. A daughter, Clara, who's 12. And a son, Jeffrey, and Jeffrey is autistic.
Okay.
And has some of the more severe disabilities associated with autism, but a lovable young man.
Are these the kids that you get together with on Friday nights?
Yes,
for dinner?
Yes, okay. Indeed, they are.
Wonderful.
We have this family tradition of family dinner together on Friday nights.
And that started when your kids were pretty young.
It started very, very early, yes. We used to always go out for dinner on Friday night, and still do.
That's wonderful.
My son has a list of restaurants that we rotate among.
All right.
The last time was a Mexican restaurant, actually. We have Korean and Chinese and Greek and Italian and Burmese, and I've forgotten what all else. We just rotate among them.
Nice. Okay, and then your second child.
Second child is Pamela. Pam is married to a young man who's now retired. They live down in La Quinta, just south of Palm Springs.
Okay.
They have three children, all grown. The daughter graduated recently from USC and has a job. It's something to do with the recording industry, although I'm not exactly sure what it is, but she likes it and is very happy in that position. And they have two sons. The oldest, Eric, is in the securities business. He's an associate for a company that invests rich people's money. I'm not a client. Brian works for a Silicon Valley startup. It's a company that in some way espouses health through exercise, something I shy away from. Lara, my youngest daughter, is married to a good Italian, Guido Del Piccolo. He is a professor of sociology at Santa Monica Community College, probably one of the most senior people there. They have three children. The oldest is a substitute teacher in the Los Angeles school system. Amalia is their second daughter, and she is a nurse, and she's doing some specialty training in Denver at the moment.
Okay.
And we hope we'll come back to the West Coast after she finishes that. And they have a son, Patrick. Patrick is a real special guy. He's adopted and is African American. He's now a senior in high school and is very interested in music. And where that will take him, I do not know.
Yeah. Wonderful. You've done so many different things in your roles at UUSM. What activities would you say were the most rewarding? Oh. And maybe which ones were the most challenging, too?
Oh, my. Back in the days when I was active on the board, the officers got to do everything. I can remember one of my jobs when I was president was when it rained hard to come over and set up the sump pump to keep the furnace dry in the basement. Not a challenging plumbing situation, but something that needed to be done. We did a number of things that year, I can remember. We got a new stove in the kitchen, and a big concern at that time was, should we try out these newfangled self-lighting burners,
right?
Or should we stay with the old pilot light?
Yeah.
The self-ignition systems were so unreliable at that time, we finally opted for the pilot lights. And of course, I'm being cursed for that now. But decisions have to be made in the context of the time. Right. We burned our mortgage that year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
We owned the place completely.
Yeah.
This has always been a very conservative congregation from the standpoint of finances.
Mm.
As a group, they dislike owing money, other than the current month's worth.
Right.
And borrowing money for any church activity was frowned on. That was occasionally a problem. I was a little bit surprised when they were discussing the budget early on. One of the things that was considered removable from the budget was the contribution to the UUA. That was not necessary. And of course, the contribution to the Pacific Central District also very often was close to the edge of the axe. I was really puzzled by this, since we were getting all our support. Our ministers were always recruited through the UUA. Our RE people were recruited through the UUA. Our hymnals were published by the UUA. A lot of our other written material came from Beacon Street.
Mm-hmm.
I had an education in church finance and quickly in district and UUA finance, and became an advocate for not cutting the UUA and PCD contributions. And in fact, I think a lot of the members of the congregation got quite used to me standing up at the finance meetings and defending those contributions.
Right.
It's not even considered anymore,
right?
Which is a wonderful legacy as far as I'm concerned. What did you ask? I've meandered so far, Jen.
Well, no, you did a good job on the most rewarding stuff that you did, but what about the most challenging? Which roles that you had were the most challenging?
I think the most challenging situation we had, and I say we because the vice president at the time and I had to face it, and forgive me, I'm quite completely blocking on that esteemed lady's name right now, but we had a secretary that was not performing what we considered adequately for the congregation. She became the terror of committee chairs because she would reject out of hand any requests for assistance. In those days, mimeographing, and it really became a sore spot. We got together and agreed that it was our responsibility to persuade this very nice lady, otherwise, to resign.
Mm.
We were successful in that venture. I don't think she was totally happy with that, but at least she did not object vehemently,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to replace her with a series of secretaries. The name has changed over the years. Support person,
mm-hmm.
for church committees, and we have people who are much more responsive and helpful and happy to do that nowadays.
Yeah. I know you have a lot of UUSM stories. What's one of your favorite stories that you'd like to share?
Oh my, we went through so many. Well, we went through a training as a congregation to accepting at first of gay individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, that whole definition. And it was a rather amazing experience as far as I'm concerned. I had gotten to know members quite well, and we had a number of people who were rather vehemently anti-gay, which was upsetting to me because it made no sense to me.
Right.
You want to have sex with, it's your business, and nobody else's, as far as I'm concerned. But these people were really quite vocal about their being anti-gay. And we went through this training, and a number of these people made a complete turnaround, which was very gratifying to me.
Yes.
Delighted to me that the training was capable of doing that kind of thing, and certainly made our church a much more welcoming place to an additional group of people.
COVID, of course, changed everything in our community. Talk about some of the changes you've noticed from that.
Oh, well, COVID to us, Anita and I, came after I had retired, I'd been retired for some time. The church was still the center of our social activities. We were getting older, and here comes this plague, and I had never even conceived of the idea of living through a plague, but here it was upon us. And we had, by that time, moved into a retirement facility called Atria in Foster City. We'd been there about 6-8 months, and all of a sudden came this lockdown. We were confined to our apartment. They supplied us with 3 meals a day, which were delivered to our apartment.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a most unpleasant total situation.
Right.
Our apartment was lovely. Anita and I got bored with each other, of course. Converse with the television set, the radio, and the people who delivered the food. And that was it. We were lucky because I had a car and we were still able to get out periodically. But there was nothing out.
Right.
All the places were closed.
Yeah.
We began having our Friday evening dinners at my son's home. We would order out and have food delivered and then eat it at their home. And that was at least a little bit of a change.
Right.
We kept up our family contacts, and that was quite pleasant. But it was a difficult time for those of us who were quite used to being active in the outside world. Anita had developed Parkinson's disease and began going quite rapidly downhill, being more and more introverted and showing signs of early dementia. Quite sadly, she became confined to bed and finally died in October of 2021. A very sad, sorry situation for our family.
Yes.
I was pleased that the children actually got together and organized a memorial service for their mother, which was held in early December of 2021. Since UUSM was under construction at the time, the services couldn't really be held here very easily. My son arranged for us to use the Congregational Church's facility, and the memorial service was held there. to my great surprise, we had over 100 people,
wow,
which was an immense gathering.
Yes,
at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but that spoke to Anita's involvement, as she was involved in so many activities. She led a group at Filoli for many years, doing flower arranging, and she taught classes here at UUSM several times in flower arranging. She made wonderful food. She was an absolutely fantastic cook. Tells you why I have this somewhat protuberant abdomen. I was very well fed. She was a wonderful companion. We traveled all over the world together. We hit every continent, including Antarctica. Actually, twice down to Antarctica. We didn't beat Reinhard. We only got to 25 countries. We traveled a great deal. South America. The only continent we really didn't travel much in was Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a Nile cruise.
Mm-hmm.
That was wonderful. And I look forward to adding to South Africa yet. If I can make it before my time comes.
What keeps you connected to UUSM at this point?
Oh, well, it's the people. The congregation has not lost any warmth, even though the membership has changed almost completely. Only a few fossils like Frank Sebody and me around. I still try to get to Sunday services as often as I can.
You do.
I try to get to men's steak. It used to be steak night. Now it's whatever you bring to grill night.
Right.
That's still a very pleasant conversational group that ranges all over the everything. Got almost a founding member of the Aging to Saging groups here. We started that project in 2000. And in the group that started in 2000 still has Kim, Morton, and I are original members of that group.
Okay.
And we're still hanging on here.
Good.
There's the discussion groups, the open circles.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to one of those, and Kathy Van Leeuwen so capably leads that group. It's really wonderful.
Yeah. Are you excited about the sanctuary renovations?
I am very excited to see the new sanctuary. I'm hopeful that it will be as useful and multifunctional as we are told it will be. I'm waiting to see. The old wood is mostly still there.
Yes, yes.
And that was such a warm feeling to that space.
Definitely.
That's why it was so popular for weddings.
Right. Will be again.
Yes, I hope so.
What are your hopes for the future of UUSM?
I hope that, one, UUSM will stay on.
Right.
New active. I am amused when I think back and remember that when we walked in the door, they were talking about growth,
mm-hmm,
and all the potential people that were members on the peninsula. Each minister has come in and talked about attracting new members. And yet the membership, which remains at around, if I recall, 125, has gone in a waving, steady line, sometimes a little bit up and sometimes a little bit down, but it stays right there. And to me, that's the people who are really attracted to Unitarian Universalism. We can march, if not in mass, at least happily together into the future.
Right. All right, we're going to wrap this up with some quick hitters. I'll ask you a quick question and you can give me an answer. Are you ready?
Sure.
What's the best flavor of ice cream?
Chocolate.
Chocolate. Straight up chocolate.
Chocolate.
Okay. All right. What's the scariest nightmare?
The scariest nightmare, I think, for any parent is something happening to one of the kids.
Right.
Or grandkids. I shudder even thinking about it.
Yeah. What would be a perfect day for you?
A nice, quiet, late breakfast.
Okay.
Listening to KQED.
Mm-hmm.
Then going off after my nice, warm shower. And getting dressed, and then going into my office and being able to read my communications, do whatever business I need to do, and then settle down with either the current issue of the New York Review of Books.
Okay, that does sound like a pretty good day. What is the best song of all time?
Best song? Stormy Weather.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. What kind of books do you enjoy?
Oh, I enjoy all kinds of books. I like novels. I love John Irving. I read biographies, amazingly. I was surprised when I started doing that, but they're fascinating.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by the Supreme Court, and I've read lots and lots of books about the court, layman's books, not professionals. I like history.
Yeah.
I like English history. I read everything.
You really do. You really have a broad outlook there. What is the best movie of all time?
Oh, I'm tempted to say All Quiet on the Western Front.
That's a good one. What do you put on a hot dog?
I put on a hot dog, yellow mustard, and ketchup, and absolutely essential is chopped raw onions.
Ah, okay. What's the best beverage? Alcoholic or not, what's the best beverage?
My wife has trained me over the years. She was a Diet Coke addict. It took me almost a year to go through the stash of Diet Coke that we had in the apartment when she died. So I'm quite used to Diet Coke. But water to me is really fine.
Sure.
You know.
What is your favorite local charity?
Besides UUSM?
Well, you can include UUSM.
Okay, UUSM is my major charity.
Okay.
Homework Central, I think, is
an
absolutely magnificent organization doing important work to help young people make those first steps towards getting their brains working and adjusting to society.
Yeah. What's the best advice you ever got?
I laugh about that. My father was very plentiful with his advice. And he unfortunately had the idea that if he gave you advice, you needed to obey it.
Ah, yes.
He was very upset if you didn't listen to him. And so it has engendered in me the dictum that if my children ask for advice and I give it, I do not expect them to pay any attention to it at all.
Right.
It's made both the kids happier and then me too.
Okay. What's the best religion?
The one that's best for you.
Excellent. Thank you, Richard. I so appreciate you taking the time to talk to me for the Connections podcast. It's been an honor for me to be able to speak to you today. Many thanks, as always, to our listeners. Keep making connections.